Welcome to a Weird News Roundup presented by Odyssey's Something Offbeat podcast. We explore strange tales reported on by Odyssey's radio newsrooms from coast to coast. I'm your Roundup host, Lauren Berry. We're heading into this week's stories in a Ferrari that sold for $40 million. From there, we're headed to a legendary literary destination you might not know about in Mississippi. Then, we'll hear all about Nimrods, a new movie that takes viewers on an offbeat journey into the music of Green Day. And to end the show, we've got angry beavers and angry bears on the loose. To get things going, here's Mike DeBusky on a new morning out of Odyssey Station WBEN in Buffalo. He's got the details on a Ferrari that sold for $40 million at a charity auction.
Yeah, $40 million, which was way more than anyone was expecting, even given that this was a charity auction at a pretty ritzy car event. This is R.M. Sotheby's auction in Monterey, California, which took place this weekend. Usually charity auctions, we see, you know, a lot of excitement, bidding and that sort of thing. It does sort of inflate the value, especially of cars. This is also Car Week in Monterey, California, which is this big kind of special event for car collectors to bring out their rarest and most special stuff. Manufacturers like Ferrari get in on the fun as well. And Ferrari did bring the first chassis, basically the first production version of the Luce, which is their all-electric car, to this event. It is like the first one off the production line. So all of those factors did sort of like culminate to get people expecting someone, a bidder, a wealthy person, to pay up between $1 and $2 million for this thing. But 40 is way more than really anybody was expecting. And it's especially eye-opening when you consider that the Luce, which is Ferrari's first all-electric car, it's a five-seat crossover, drew a lot of criticism when it debuted earlier this year. You and I talked about this, Susan, I believe, in May. This car was not a hit on launch. People did not like the way it looked. It's styled by Johnny Ive, who is the guy who designed the iPhone and a number of iconic Apple products, taking his talents to the automotive sector, and it was not a surefire hit. People also criticizing the idea of an electric Ferrari. Ferrari, obviously, really high-end Italian sports car brand, known for that sort of sonorous engine note. Again, it's an all-electric car, so it doesn't really make that noise. But even still, $40 million was the price tag for this particular version of the Luce. Admittedly, a very special version of this car, given that it was kind of the first one. They call it the tailor-made one, so it's got like some special features on it. But a really, really big number for this pretty controversial car.
Oh, it really is. I just wonder now, could this particular charity, could this turn the tide for Ferrari and maybe increase demand for it?
Yeah, it's an interesting question, right? So there's a couple different things to consider when we're talking about this particular auction. The proceeds of it went to the Ferrari Foundation. This was a charity auction. So that also maybe contributed a little bit to the bidding here. Ferrari Foundation is focused on education efforts around the world. For example, they're rebuilding a school that was damaged by wildfires in Southern California. So that's a piece of this. It is also a charity. So it's you get a little bit of a tax, you know, benefit from that part of it. So there's maybe that, you know, factor to consider that maybe overinflating the value of this vehicle a little bit. There's also the way Ferrari does business. So Ferrari makes, a lineup of vehicles like any other car maker does, but they also do like really special cars that they only do like, you know, a couple hundred examples of. And in order to get an allocation for those cars, well, you have to be like a repeat Ferrari customer. You have to buy, you know, quote unquote, more pedestrian versions of their cars in order to get access to the really special stuff. Ferrari says they're not doing that with the Luce. It's just a normal car for them. But even still, you can imagine that, you know, consumers, Ferrari enthusiasts and things like that maybe have their eye on that when they're thinking about, you know, shelling out for, you know, a sort of unusual car like this. However, the other way to think about this is that Ferrari says that Luces are basically sold out for the rest of the year. They had a production run plan for 2026 models, and they are all accounted for. They say that there is huge demand for this vehicle in China. Again, pretty interesting. interesting, given that, you know, this was not a hit, at least it seemed, when it first was unveiled. Even the previous CEO of Ferrari, Luca de Montezemolo, said that this was basically a mark on Ferrari's brand, that this was the wrong direction for that car company. Seems like in some of the sales numbers, it's working out for them. But there are those kind of other considerations to factor in. We're just going to have to wait and see as production actually ramps up for this thing. This is like literally the first car off the assembly line. Once these things kind of become a little bit more, you know, mass produced as the years go on, I think that's going to give us a little bit better of an idea into exactly how much demand there is for something like a 5-seat all-electric Ferrari.
When I think about literary history in the U.S., I think of New York City or the City Lights bookstore in San Francisco, even the Long Island Sound, where one could look out and think about how we all beat on, like boats against the current, borne back ceaselessly into the past. As F. Scott Fitzgerald put it in The Great Gatsby, often considered the great American novel. However, there's another place, tucked away in Mississippi, that is home to a treasure trove of American literary history. Kelly and Bob Phillips of Own the Road with Kelly and Bob out of Odyssey Station KRLD 1080 in Dallas visited this spot for their America 250 tour. Let's listen in to just a bit of their journey.
Pretty much for the entire time that has elapsed since our forefathers signed the Declaration of Independence until today, people in our country have been attempting to write the great American novel.
And the guy you're about to meet says maybe, just maybe, it's already been written. Only time will tell.
One thing for sure, though, many of those authors who would be on the list of those that presumably might write such a book have passed through a particular place in Oxford, Mississippi.
I was born in Marks, Mississippi, which is about 50 miles from here, and which some people will know and a few recall that it was where the Poor People's March started. In 1968, King and the organizers wanted to start it there because Quitman County, where Marks is, was then and probably still is to some extent the poorest per capita county in the nation. That's why they started Poor People's Marks there. My father went there as a doctor when he got out of the Navy, and it was close to here, for one thing, which is where my mother was born. My mother was born in Oxford. Her parents lived here. All of her aunts, uncles lived here.
That's Richard Holworth. He wasn't born here, but he's from just down the road. And you'd be hard-pressed to find anyone who reflects what Oxford is all about more than Richard.
Well, hard-pressed to find anyone still living, that is. There is one person who has for decades been identified with this place, and Richard grew up just across the street from that person's home. It's a person whose name you might have heard.
So he moved to Oxford in 1963 and lived in a house that was directly across the street from Faulkner's home. I never knew Faulkner. A lot of people in my family did. One of my uncles, great uncles, was his doctor. And my great aunt was very close to his wife and close to him. She had a dinner party at one point, so that she was also friends with Eudora Welty. So she had Eudora Welty come and had Faulkner come. That was where they first met. And my mother's father was a literature professor here at the university, taught for almost 60 years. And so those are kind of some of my book bones, I guess.
And that would be William Cuthbert Faulkner, the American writer from Mississippi that won the Nobel Prize for Literature in 1949. He later lived in Oxford, and Richard Holworth grew up just across the street from Faulkner's home.
And that had a profound effect on Richard Holworth. Even as a little boy, he noticed how many people flocked to that house across the street. People from all over the world.
when I was a teenager, when I was a young teenager, this oldest brother of mine said, we ought to open a bookstore here one day. The idea was been planted long ago.
And since 1979, Square Books, right here in Little Oxford, Mississippi, has been on every publisher's and avid reader's list of important American bookstores.
In fact, Square Books is to authors what Texas is to country music. If you're going to make it in the business, you have to come through Oxford. Even the really famous, like John Grisham, who doesn't need the publicity, still makes time to come to Square Books.
We'd have people wind up down the street for signing. It was going to begin at 10 o'clock in the morning. They'd get here at 4 a.m. or 2 a.m. the night before, bring a blanket and sleep out on the sidewalk in order to be in line.
To get 30 seconds with John Grisham. Has the great American novel, is it yet to be written, or has it been that we just haven't labeled it? Is there such a thing?
Oh, absolutely. A great American novel appears several times a year. Now you're going to ask me to name them, but now I'm not sure that I can.
Thank you so much for listening to this Weird News Roundup presented by Odyssey's Something Offbeat podcast. This episode was written and produced by me, Lauren Berry. Special thanks to WBEN News and Talk in Buffalo, On the Road with Kelly and Bob out of KRLD 1080 in Dallas, KNX News in Los Angeles, and the Dana and Parks Show out of KMBZ in Kansas City. You can find all of these programs, including the Something Offbeat podcast, on the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.